This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker Campbell, welcome in on this Saturday afternoon. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, sponsored by Progressive Insurance. And perhaps you're looking for a career that you'll love flexibility, great pay and benefits at one of the country's top workplaces. Come join a growing team. Go to progressive.com/careers and apply online today. That's progressive.com. College football championship week. Our coverage continues and we are so thrilled to have back with us from the Washington Post. That is Chuck Culpepper. And Chuck, I trust you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, Elissa. Thanks for having me. And yes, I was up in Michigan for that gigantic game.
Oh, so, yes.
You know.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about Michigan and Jim Harbaugh here momentarily. But we always, when we have you on the program, we are talking college football. But I know you are personally a big golf aficionado. So give us some of your Tiger takeaways, because we are celebrating this week on our program his return. What's just your level of excitement that he's back and competing in the 2023 Hero World Challenge?
I'm that rare golf lover who doesn't play golf. It's very strange. But I do respect it a lot, and I do massively. And I do respect this massively. And it's gotten me thinking about so many things. One of them is, I think a lot of people have a relationship with pain, you know, physical pain.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his relationship with pain, I was just thinking, must be so intricate, you know, by now. All these stages of pain and managing pain. And so here we are at another one that I don't think I expected I would see. I don't know how you feel about it, this idea that maybe there'll be some other kind of chapter going next year, and here are the little hints at it, and, you know, he's back in the Bahamas event, and he's using his, you know, it's funny, he comes back and he uses almost his own dialect, like feels.
Yeah.
You know, he always uses that word, the feels.
He does.
And so it's just, for a sport that's had a lot of woe lately and a lot of distraction and so on, it's quite a fresh turn, this idea that he might be able to do this again in a viable way.
Yeah. Washington Post, Chuck Culpepper with us at Sports Map Radio Network. Give him a follow on X or Twitter, and that is at Chuck Culpepper #1. And you talk about Tiger Woods and how he is muscling through. He's managing the pain. He's a 15-time major winner. He knows how to make it happen. So what were your thoughts when he took that first swing at the Hero World Challenge? He didn't look like he was in any pain.
Right, that's true. And I just thought, you know, surgery itself is, you know, more advanced all the time. And it just makes you think of things that maybe you once would have considered miracles, because, you know, that withdrawal from the Masters last year and that weather at the Masters that year, at that particular stage of it, you know, just so was all, had this sort of foreboding of, you know, this is it. And on December the 30th, he'll be 48. And I think I used to think that when he got to 48, he'd be just about the youngest 48 around, and that he'd still be, you know, he'd still be in the mix. I don't know if he's going to be, like, in the mix next year, but, you know, now we think of his 48 as a different 48, but it's not that old, really. And so, I don't know, it just, that first swing, as you say, and all of it, these are feelings of hope. And that was just to get a glimpse at that was a kind of a feeling of hope, even if you immediately want to chastise yourself for that maybe the hope is irrational in some way, but it was a feeling of hope.
Well, and that's so interesting, because hope is a beautiful thing. And let's talk about some of the questions that we hope he answers as we look ahead. So give us your expectations. And I just continue to find what's so surprising, too. Let me just add on this, is that he just moves the needle. I mean, all eyes are on him. I mean, everybody's watching, and he is going to be 48.
I find what you just said, the that particular needle, and move that particular moving of the needle. I guess we all have the same needle, but that particular moving of the needle, I find it so fascinating, just still, and how it works, and how it's and how it has evolved through the years, and how what it might represent. I think, you know, graduate students should do papers on like what it tells us. You know, all, it tells us so many different things, I think. And so I think I've indoctrinated myself to have the expectations low after all the things that have happened and after all the pain, as we were saying. But low expectations can be a healthy way to go about certain things. And maybe I don't want to forecast that we'll be surprised, but won't that be something if in one of these events next year or something we get a real surprise, like maybe even with his, dare I say, contention.
Yeah, I hear you saying, you know, kind of pump the brakes, you know, low expectations. But I think that the one thing that stands out is leading into the Hero World Challenge, just that press conference. I mean, mentally, I mean, we got a little bit of a glimpse where just his confidence level is. And it's unbelievable. He truly does believe, Chuck, that he will win again.
Yes, that confidence level has always been something. But you're right in to pinpoint that. It's something that I guess a lot of us were kind of hearing about before he appeared in terms of, hey, he's really looking good. He's really feeling better. And, you know, such a gigantic star that when he's really looking good and feeling better, the whispers get around, you know, and then he appeared. And, you know, it's funny. He's still in all the majors that he's played in recent years where just looks so sore. He still has carried around that mind, that peerless mind, that mind that always arrives at these events with this feeling of, oh, I could win. It just always does, even with circumstances that indicate that that's impossible. So it's something to behold, that mind. It really is.
Yes, and it is. As you said, Chuck, it is fascinating to watch. Hey, if you are just joining us, we are so glad you're with us on this Saturday afternoon. He's back. We love him. And that is Chuck Culpepper from The Washington Post. Does an amazing job. Check out all of his posts and give him a follow on X. And that is Chuck Culpepper number one. Of course, Friday night, he was in Vegas. Oregon faced Washington in the Pac-12 championship game. But let's have you weigh in on some of the other news in college football. You were talking about during the Thanksgiving holiday, you know, covering Michigan. So what does the future hold for Jim Harbaugh?
Oh, I think the immediate future might very well hold a national title, although I still struggle to see them, Michigan beating Georgia. I think the future after that gets very murky because I don't know how the NCAA is going to rule eventually on this sign-stealing show that we've all had through the season.
Yeah.
And of course, it's very easy to go ahead and start picking out which NFL team might need him next year. I've seen a lot of people doing that.
The carousel is already spinning. Yes,
there's always candidates for that in every season. I still think his love for Michigan is so deep and ironclad. I don't know. I guess I could see a scenario where that love actually plays a role in going to the NFL, you know, to try to ease the noise around it in some way. But there's so many oddities about this particular case, and it seems that every time you think that you've heard the strangest thing, the next story comes out, the latest being Yahoo's Dan Wetzel with the story about Uncle T, the booster who might have helped in this regard, and with the funding of the sign ceiling scheme. So it just keeps going in really strange ways, and it really prompts quite some discussions, Thanksgiving discussions, post Thanksgiving discussions, because the rule is old about scouting other teams, and it might be antiquated. especially in this era of phones. The rule was voted in 1994 when we all didn't have phones where you could record someone's sideline. So it leaves a lot of room for discussion of the propriety of the rule, the use of the rule, whether the rule will be a rule coming ahead. And so I find his future very murky because I have found the whole case, while, you know, highly vivid and entertaining, to be murky as well.
Hey, we are winding down our time with Chuck Culpepper. My final question for you is, did you agree with the suspension of Jim Harbaugh and the Big Ten's explanation?
Here's what I thought about how it went. I thought it was something that the Big Ten could do to demonstrate that it was serious about the rule, because the rule was still a rule, so we should abide by the rules. And I thought it was a fairly harmless way. I did not think they were going to lose any of those three games with him coaching them during the week and then not on the sideline. And I thought that it was very light in a way, even though I'm sure it hurt, and I'm sure it deeply hurt not to be there for the Ohio State win. But I just did not think Michigan was going to lose any of those games, and so I thought it was I wouldn't say fair, but it was really convenient for the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Hey, enjoy all the championship games today. We always appreciate you carving out some time, Chuck, and we look forward to catching up a little bit later this month.
Thanks, Alyssa. Happy December.
Absolutely. It's here. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We always love to connect coast to coast. You can join us on social media, X or at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. Email the show, info@eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. My amazing producer uploads each and every one. And you can take us anywhere, anytime. Download our app for all the latest sporting news and developing stories. And we are powered by Progressive Insurance. Bundle home, auto, and save. Visit progressive.com. It is hard to believe. Week 14 college football championship weekend. That coverage is going to continue a little bit later in the hour. But right now, in our next segment, we are going to power down and take time for a book review. We're going to shine the spotlight on 20 greatest moments in New York sports history, our generation of memories from 1960 to today. And we are thrilled to have with us for the very first time, he is a veteran in our business, veteran sports journalist, and Emmy award-winning sports producer, and that is the great Todd Ehrlich. Hello, Todd.
Well, hello to you. What a lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, we're thrilled to have you on the program. This is your first time on the show, and just let me start off by saying congratulations on your book. I mean, there are so many memorable sports moments. It's quite a collection when you talk about New York sports history, and so I just have to wonder, as we step back, I mean, was this project a little overwhelming in terms of a challenge? I mean, how in the world did you and your co-author, Gary Myers, how did you ultimately decide the top 20?
Well, I got to tell you, it's interesting because the top 20 actually came together a little bit more easily than you would think, and that's how we came up with the line "Our Generation of Memories," because it was sitting around and talking about what resonated with us, what were the moments, what were the championships, what stood out in our mind from all the sports in New York. And they're really sporting events that really help galvanize this community, but also help galvanize the country. I mean, you think about Ollie Frazier, you think about Secretariat or Tiger's Run through Bethpage in the U.S. Open, or you think about some of the Super Bowl victories with the Giants and the helmet catch or Namath guarantee or Willis hobbling onto the court or the Miracle Mets or the ball going through Buckner's legs. I mean, you just go through your mind's eye, and the 20 sort of came together fairly easily. And then, you know, it came to ranking them, writing them. And then I personally did over 100 interviews with athletes, broadcasters, columnists that covered it to get the inside word, and I got a lot of exclusive stories that were never told and a lot of color to these events and backstories that I think the readers will find really interesting, whether they live in New York or whether they're just sports fans from elsewhere.
So tell us some more as far as how you went about, as far as the layout of the book. You talked about the 100 interviews, but it's broken into four parts, and you include a storyline that led up to that particular, that very special moment.
Well, it's a great question. It's something that I'm exceedingly proud of. You're going to find this interesting. I started reading a lot of James Patterson through the years.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And what I really liked about him was they weren't 30-page chapters. So if you were tired at night or you were on the beach or wherever you were reading, it'd be three or four pages and you could always stop someplace. I thought that was a gift to the reader who was giving you the gift of time. So then I decided to try to format the book in a way that would give people natural points to stop and also bring people back in time. So I start with a time capsule, and the time capsule is who won the Heisman that year. I know you were just talking about college football, and your audience loves college football. Who was the mayor of New York? Who was the president? What was the price of gas? Who won the Grammys? Like, oh, I remember that song. I love that song.
Yeah.
And it takes you back. And then, you know, a lot of people know the moments, but what they might not know is how did you get to that moment? How were the teams constructed? Coaches that came in, players, trades, big games, big series. What led to the moment? And then I got Peter Boddy to lend a different voice to write about the moment itself. And then I did a post game, and the post game is you know part of the 100 interviews I did, and that's why I came up with a lot of exclusive stories.
And it was a collaborative effort, co-author Gary Myers. But for you personally, I mean, Todd, like I mentioned in the open, I mean, you've been in this business for many, many years. I mean, what is your favorite New York moment in sports history?
So my favorite moment, I think, is the number one moment. And I was at WCBS TV, and we had a pregame show and a postgame show and a Super Bowl special. And the Patriots, you know, went into Super Bowl 42. Looking to be the first 19-0 perfect season and supersede actually what the Dolphins had done. And people didn't really give the Giants any chance of winning that game. And I started digging in and doing research. And everybody that follows football, they know that the Friday practice is a dress rehearsal and everything needs to be buttoned up. And David Tyree couldn't catch anything, as Amani Toomer told me, he couldn't catch a cold during that practice, and he called it the worst practice he had ever had in his life. He said afterwards, Eli encouraged him, saying, quote, "You're a gamer. I know you'll be ready." And then when I interviewed Eli, he also said something I found very interesting. He said, "I always trust my guys. If you don't trust your guys, you're going to hesitate on everything." And think about it. If he hesitated on the helmet catch, yeah, the Giants would have never, ever beaten the Patriots. So he throws it up. Tyree was a gamer. He comes down with the helmet catch. And then I followed up with him. And people are known for certain things in life. And I said, "David, I'm assuming that not a day doesn't go by that somebody doesn't come up to you and go, oh, David Tyree, this is where I was when the helmet catch happened. Can you share, you know, one of the stories that really stood out to you that somebody might have said?" And he said one day a Giant fan came up to him and shared that his grandfather was on his deathbed. When they all watched the game together, they were expecting to die within a month. Mm-hmm. But he ended up living 6 months longer, and according to that man, it was because of all the joy that they got from watching his helmet catch and the team's Super Bowl victory. And David said that, "I think somebody's life extended or perceived to be extended beyond expectation is humbling and the most overwhelming thing that's ever been said to him." And that's the power of sports. And I was just so moved by that I asked David to do the foreword for a book.
You know, you talk about the power of sports, and I just think about how sports overall, how it brings communities together. I mean, it helps people, it helps coworkers connect, and it's a beautiful thing. Yes, Todd?
Oh, my God. I could not agree more. And Another one of the reasons I wrote the book is I have a six-year-old, and I want families to buy this book. Yeah, oh, my God. You could eat them with a spoon. I want people to buy this book. Uh-huh. I want them to read it as a family. So
yes.
I want them to take chapter one, and I want the father and the son or the mother and the daughter, the father and the daughter, however it all works out, to read a chapter and then discuss it at the dinner table. And you know what? If you can learn the history of sports, it's really uplifting. And like I said earlier, it really helps to, there's nothing else that I know of that galvanizes a community the way sports does. And these moments galvanize New York City and like I said, also parts of the country who watched it.
You know, Todd, what an awesome gift for your son. And that's going to give you an opportunity to, you know, kind of relive so many of those memories. But I mean, we know this as parents that sports shapes one's values and behavior for adult life. I mean, it's going to have a profound impact on your little guy. What's your son's name, Todd?
Jagger David Erwin.
Oh my gosh, awesome. So what does he think about daddy now being an author?
Well, you know, it was interesting because writing a book is no joke, as I'm sure you know. And so I spent, you know, 2 years, nights and weekends, for hours and hours and hours in daddy's office, as he would say. And, you know, we would take breaks to go to his t-ball games and his basketball games and out to dinner. But it was a lot of hours writing. And then all of a sudden, you know, you mentioned Gary before. We were with Gary Myers and Jim Leyritz at a book signing at Bookends, and I was talking there, and I said, you know, I dedicated the book to my mom, my dad, my wife, and my son, mm-hmm. and I said his name, and I looked over, and his eyes were like big as saucers.
Oh,
and,
yeah, uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, he saw people asking me for autographs of the book, and then we went to another book signing and another book signing, and
oh, my gosh.
And started to really get into it. He's like, this is Daddy's book. Daddy
yes,
wrote this
yeah.
book. And it's just, it's really sweet. He's a wonderful child, as I tell people. He's really well-raised.
Well, congratulations on your new book, Collected Together for the First Time, The 20 Greatest Moments in New York Sports History, chronicles the most memorable sporting events to be held in New York and ranking them based on their importance and the effect on the sport and the city. Our special guest has been Todd Ehrlich. First time on the program. We look forward to another conversation. Todd, quickly connect with our audience. You know, Christmas is here, right? Where can they go? Because they want to get those and put those in their friends and family stockings.
Makes a wonderful stocking stuffer. I mean, it's available at Barnes & Noble, where all good books are sold, and it's on Amazon. Tons and tons and tons of exclusive stories and funny stories that you won't find anyplace else. And I think it's an easy, fun read. I think your listeners will really get a kick out of it.
Well, continued success. We look forward to catching up with you in 2024. Thank you, Todd. All the best.
Oh, I appreciate you so much for the time. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Round out your protection for life, phone, and pet health insurance. Think Progressive. Progressive.com. Conference championship, college football predictions, previews, you bet it continues. And it's been fascinating to watch all the Power 5 conference title games and the big-time implications as to what the college football playoff and national championship picture will look like to cap off the season. We are thrilled to have back with us from VSEM, and that is Tim Murray. This is an exciting weekend. How you doing, Tim?
No doubt. I'm fired up for the remainder of this weekend and what will unfold this afternoon in Atlanta and then later on tonight in Charlotte and in Indianapolis.
And, of course, Texas and Oklahoma State, they are underway right now. So let's focus our attention on the SEC championship. Countdown is on. Georgia, Alabama, who has the edge in your mind?
I mean, based off of the odds, obviously Georgia has a slight edge here as a, you know, 4.5, 5-point favorite. You know, when you look at what Georgia has been able to do on the offensive side of the ball, assuming health with Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey, Carson Beck has continued to rise as a really solid quarterback, and he continues to impress me this year with his play. The thing that, you know, when I look at this particular game and you look at the history of the SEC championship played in Atlanta, is, you know, the fast track, and will that continue, and will we continue to see a higher scoring game between these two teams? Because history has told us that, you know, that's kind of the case. But, you know, from you know, who has the edge, you have to give a slight lean to Georgia. You know, I do love the two-headed backfield that they've continued to rely on here with Edwards and Milton. So yeah, a slight lean here to Georgia, but Nick Saban was in this situation 2 years ago in 2021 as an underdog in the SEC championship. And, lo and behold, they were able to rise to the occasion and get that victory, pretty comfortably over Georgia.
You know, Tim, I want you to fill in the blank. I mean, whoever controls blank has the best chance to win. What's going to be the key?
Whoever controls, I would say, the ground, the best chance to win here. And, you know, you look at Jalen Milroe for Atlanta, Alabama, how much is he going to be able to utilize his legs in this game? And then, you know, like I mentioned with Georgia, are they going to be able to run the game and slow down the rushing attack of Alabama? And I think, you know, if Georgia can control the run game for Alabama and slow down Jalen Milroe, who, you know, last week ran for over 100 yards against Auburn, and we've really started to see Jalen Milroe utilize his legs quite a bit as this Alabama team has started to ascend. You think back to the LSU game in early November, he ran for 155 yards in that game. So I think if Georgia can control him and keep him in the pocket, they're going to feel pretty confident that they can come out with a victory. If Jalen Milroe can get out and utilize those legs, I think that's where this game gets really tricky, and that's where Alabama has a chance to win this game.
Georgia Bulldogs, they are the number one team in the country. They will face number 8, Alabama, the Crimson Tide. And just wondering, all the hypotheticals, we've been hearing them all week. If Alabama should win tonight, do they get in that Final Four?
Boy, that is the situation I don't think the committee wants to have to answer, because it really opens up the can of worms. And as we're watching Texas right now, if Texas takes care of business against Oklahoma State, Texas is going to be screaming from the mountaintop that they deserve to get in over Alabama, because they went to Alabama and beat them by 10 points. And Alabama and the other side is going to say, we're a conference champ of arguably the best conference in the country. We just beat the two-time defending champion in Georgia. That's the best win in college football. So I think there's going to be a lot of committee members kind of quietly hoping that Georgia wins just to make their life easier. But to answer your question, you know, I personally think Texas should get in over Alabama because games have to matter. Mm-hmm. But that being said, we've never seen the SEC be left out of the college football playoff, especially with one loss. So it's going to be a fascinating discussion. And, you know, if Alabama does pull off the minor upset today, the committee's going to then put on their Louisville hats because they're going to want Florida State to get bounced out of there.
Yeah.
And then it would be pretty clean, I think. Then it would be the Pac-12 champion. It would be, you know, Texas, assuming they win. It would be Alabama, and then it would be, you know, Michigan, who plays later tonight against Iowa. But yeah, I mean, I think if you like chaos, you want Alabama to beat Georgia, and you want Florida State to beat Louisville, and see what this committee is ultimately going to do. Who gets the upper hand? Is it Alabama, the SEC champ, or is it Texas, who beat Alabama in a head-to-head game back in September?
It is our favorite time of the year, championship week coverage. He's breaking it all down. Tim Murray from VSIN. Direct our listeners, our national audience, where can they go and connect with you online?
Yeah, Tim Murray is where you can find me on social media, and I'll be firing away all into the evening hours watching these games.
Hey, it's going to be a late night. And let's step back a moment. You're talking about Texas. I mean, they went to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. Is the Crimson Tide, are they a flawed team this year? I mean, what's different about them?
You look at just the skill position players, and you're wondering who those playmakers are at the wide receiver position. You know, Isaiah Bond is certainly a solid wide receiver. Jermaine Burton has had some big plays this year. But, I mean, 2 years ago, you think back to Alabama when they went into the Georgia Dome and pulled off the upset over Georgia. Well, Bryce Young was playing quarterback, and Jamison Williams was his wide receiver. I mean, those guys don't exist on this roster. I've really been impressed by Jalen Milroe and how he started to kind of emerge this season. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Jalen Milroe was benched in favor of, you know, Ty Simpson and Tyler Buckner, but, you know, Alabama came to I think cooler heads prevailed, and they've allowed Jalen Milroe to utilize his legs, like I mentioned, and accentuate what he's best at. But you know, you just look at this, these offensive skill position players, and while I'm sure, you know, 97% of the country would love majority of these players on their roster, you know, for Alabama, when you're going up against the Georgias of the world, and heck, even, you know, a Michigan, you know, do you think you have enough skill talent? So I think they're slightly flawed, but, you know, all in all, you look at, you know, this is an Alabama team that, you know, a lot of people in my circles, you know, the gambling circles, thought under 10.5 wins was a really good bet. And ultimately, even though they were very fortunate with a fourth and goal from the 32 last week against Auburn, they were able to get to 11 wins, and they were able to go undefeated in the SEC this year. So, look, you know, to call Alabama flawed, I think is not incorrect. That being said, I mean, I think the majority of the country would love a flawed 11-1 football team that went 8-0 in the SEC.
Yeah, good point. Hey, Tim Murray, VSiN with us, and let's talk some more about Alabama's quarterback, Jalen Milroe. He certainly has been striding out, especially in the second half of the season. But as we look ahead to tonight's game, I mean, how can Alabama win? I mean, what's the vulnerability of Georgia that the Crimson Tide can exploit?
Well, I think, you know, Jalen Milroe, as I mentioned, using his legs, I really think that could be something that they could take advantage of there. And, you know, this is a Georgia team that obviously is, you know, in the eyes of most, the best team in the country. You know, in the eyes of some odds makers, it's Georgia and Michigan and Oregon kind of in a three-headed race there. I think utilization of the legs, and then you wonder about the health of Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey. You know, Brock Bowers sat out last week. Remember, you know, he had that tightrope surgery on his ankle, and hasn't been fully 100% healthy. And, you know, this is a defense for Alabama that is very strong, and, you know, found out ways to bend but not totally break against Jaden Daniels, who could very well be your Heisman Trophy winner. While Jaden Daniels utilized his legs a bunch in that game, he was a bit off when it came to throwing through the air. So, you know, I think you think back to the LSU game, a game that, you know, Alabama was able to pull away and win by two touchdowns. Malik Nabers had his, and Jaden Daniels was able to rush a lot. I don't think Malik Nabers, in my opinion, there is a Malik Nabers talent like that on Georgia's roster. So, you know, I think Alabama has the potential to try to slow things down a little bit here this afternoon against Georgia. And, and I do think there's a path. You know, I think there's certainly a path for Alabama figuring out a way to win this game.
Do you anticipate, Tim, that this will be a low-scoring game?
You know, it's funny. I just kind of gave you some points that, you know, said that I thought it would be. Ultimately, I did play over 54 earlier this week, over 54 points in this game.
Uh-huh.
And the reason is, you know, you look at the fast track there in Atlanta, and while this game could potentially get off to a sluggish start, I do think ultimately, you know, we saw last year 50-30 was the final score. 2 years ago, 41-24. And those were some really elite Georgia defenses, right? And both of those teams, both Alabama 21 and LSU last year, were able to find success against this Georgia team. And I think Georgia's defense is very strong, one of the best in the country, but certainly not as good, in my opinion, as they have been the previous 2 years. And I think the offense for Georgia is actually better than it's been the last 2 years. You know, Stetson Bennett obviously was a phenomenal collegiate player, but, you know, Carson Beck, you see some tools there that could really, you know, be accentuated in the professional game. And if Ladd McConkey and you know, Lovett and Brock Bowers and this running duo there in Georgia can kind of get rolling, I do actually think we're going to see some points here this afternoon. And that's kind of what the history has told us. Since 2005, the over has hit in the SEC championship in 13 of the 18 games.
The clock is on. Countdown is on for the 2023 SEC Championship, about to get underway. 4:00 Eastern Time on CBS. Alabama, Georgia, breaking it all down from VSiN. Check them out. And that is Tim Murray. Thank you so much.
Of course, anytime.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you are with us. Of course, being powered by Progressive Insurance. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Well, it is the first weekend in the month of December, and Tiger is back. In fact, it's been over 235 days since he played competitive golf and since he has competed the 2023 Masters back in April. So it's been an exciting week with Tiger at the Hero World Challenge, and we are so delighted to have back with us to kind of get his takeaways and evaluation. And that is Brody Miller from The Athletic. Give him a follow on Twitter or X at Brody A. Miller. Hello, Brody.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, golf got a huge shot in the arm with the return of Tiger. So just give us your Tiger takeaways. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, obviously with him coming back from the surgery and whatnot, I mean, few ever expect him to golf again, especially after the accident, but then after the surgery as well. So for him to be back like he is, I mean, it's just, I mean, one, it's just jarring, but two, it's surprising to see. But to give, you know, the quick synopsis, I think it's fair to say that he is moving, you know, far better than he was in, say, 2022 and 2023 Masters and whatnot, and where everything just felt so labored and intentional because he was in so much pain. Now that he has this fused ankle, I mean, his mobility is limited. He's never going to be able to be, you know, both his ankle and his back are fused, right? There's limits to what he will ever be able to be again. But it's clear that he is at least moving through less pain and able to make it 18 holes. And yeah, he, trust me, he is in pain. He said, I'm sore everywhere. But
yes, he did.
Yeah, he's like, you know, it takes hours in the morning to get ready for the round, and it takes hours winding down after to cool down from it. But, you know, all around, he played well. It's tricky. The score might be a little misleading, but, you know, he was one under for, I believe, 11 or 12, and he was just looking solid. He was driving the ball pretty well. His irons looked good. You know, he looked, you know, like a good golfer. I think the problem was really, he hasn't practiced. That's what's so crazy about this round, right? He hasn't played 18 holes in a day. He hasn't really been out there. So those little details, right, your short game, your decision-making, I think those are just where you saw him drop to three over, just, you know, mental mistakes. And that's what he said. But yeah, no, he looked, you know, relatively speaking, pretty healthy.
And Tiger Woods, of course, has only played in five tournaments since that horrific car crash and his ankle fusion surgery. So give us your analysis. So you were talking that, you know, he's playing pain-free. At least it looks like that. But how has his swing changed since his accident? What have you learned?
Yeah, I think there's just far less mobility, I think is the right way to put it. You know, it's a genuinely smooth but less explosive swing than it used to be, which is, you know, good and bad. You know, it's a very smooth, reliable swing that he's able to repeat. He's definitely added a lot of bulk to his upper body because he's not able to get that same set of force from the lower half of his body that he used to. But, you know, at the same time, he was driving balls 330 yards at times. He was getting swing speeds up to 177 miles per hour pretty steadily. So he's definitely not, you know, some, you know, old player who's, you know, just kind of hitting balls in the fairway at 250 yards. You know, he is hitting the ball. You know, he was driving Justin Thomas quite often yesterday. So it's just a tough thing for him is what it's going to look like these next days, right? How's it going to look as those holes keep kind of compounding on each other? That's always been the hardest part for his body.
And it's interesting, Brody. I mean, let's talk about some of the biggest adjustments that you've seen on how he is able to create speed, how he is able to continue to drive the ball so far. I mean, when you look at him, he hasn't missed a day in the gym. I mean, he looks physically very, very fit, right?
No, it's true. Yeah, he's definitely bulked up. And he said, he's like, yeah, I haven't been playing a lot of golf, but he's like, I'm in the gym every day. And, you know, I think there was a report from one of the reporters out here just the other day of kind of joking that he will text people, you know, like other golfers on tour at 4 a.m. being like, I'm in the gym right now. What are you doing to get better?
And oh, that's right.
How he is.
I heard that,
so,
yeah.
So, yeah, he is pretty bulky up top for sure.
So what should we expect going forward? Because I understand he wants to compete in at least one tournament a month. I mean, all I can say is from a fan's perspective, I mean, gosh, Brody, these are precious times. I mean, this is something as fans that we should never take for granted. I mean, obviously, as they talked about even on the Golf Channel, he's being very judicious and selective with when and where he wants to play. But I'm just excited we get to be a part of it and watch him vicariously, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's the right outlook, right? He's probably never going to win, you know, I think it's almost fair to say he probably will not win another major again. I doubt, who knows if he'll ever win again, but it's just those chances, kind of like you said, to see greatness, to see something that, you know, you don't get to see every day and be able to say you were kind of part of a little history watching them play golf. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And it's just fascinating to see the life that gets kind of taken out from tournament, you know, when he's here, because every single person here is following Tiger Woods, and very few are, you know, following the number one player in the world, Scottie Scheffler, Victor Hovland, and
yes,
all these guys. But that's the point, right? It's just cool to see him out there. And yeah, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, the idea of him really playing once a month and playing all four majors. But at the same time, if he's moving like he is, you know, his back's always going to hurt. His knee's always going to hurt. Those things aren't going to stop. But he is clearly moving better and just seems less pain. And I think it's reasonable to think he can do it. It's just, you know, I think the greater question is, you know, how long will he want to just put that work in that it takes to get your body ready?
Hey, we're so glad you're with us on this Saturday afternoon. You bet. Our PGA News and Notes. We're going one-on-one with Brody Miller from The Athletic, always posting amazing stuff. Check out his social media, X, at Brody A. Miller. And, you know, Brody's not often a 47-year-old headlines professional golf, but it's Tiger Woods, and so he's made this long-awaited return to competition and back at the Hero World Challenge on, you know, Thursday, and his first start since the Masters. But weigh in on his caddy, Rob McNamara. I guess, you know, they go way back. They have a long history together. Is this a temporary fit? I mean, what are Tiger's options, or is this his guy going forward?
Yeah, I think it's very temporary, for sure. Yeah, I guess that's the fun of this event, is it's all pretty low stakes.
Okay.
Jordan Spieth has his good buddy from home chatting for him. I think Tiger's a good business buddy, and they're having fun with it. He's also leaning into the goofiness of it. You know, he hit a 50-foot putt, you know, a birdie putt in point. He's like, great read, Robbie. But Rob's not putting his putt in his putt. He's not helping with yardage or anything like that. But it's definitely made a kind of goofy storyline of him carrying his bag around all day and them joking back and forth with each other, which, you know, just to build on it, it's just kind of another cool part of this week, is seeing, you know, that side of Tiger a little bit more and a little less serious and intense.
The Athletic, Brody Miller with us, SportsMap Radio Network. One of your recent posts is, of course, you know, Tiger Woods is back, but the future of the sport is at stake. So what is the future of the PGA Tour and men's professional golf? What did you share in your latest post?
Yeah, I think the really interesting, I mean, obviously, right, golf is in this crazy time, you know, where there's a war going on between leagues and between with the live golf league, trying to create, you know, steal players from the tour, and then, you know, the PGA Tour might be, you know, trying to make a deal in the next month with the public investment fund of Saudi Arabia, but it's clear if that deal will actually happen in this next month. The deadline's coming up in 30 days, and there is a lot of tension about just kind of what direction this sport should take. And I think Tiger Woods, you know, is at this really interesting point of his life where he is suddenly hyper-focused on being, you know, more of this senior presence than he ever was before. You know, he was always this very individualistic, you know, self-serious golfer. Now he is, you know, on the policy board. He's leading the other new league that, you know, TGL, that's in partnership with the PGA Tour. He's advising players and all this stuff. And it's really interesting to be at his press conference, that it was just a different side of it. He was confidently speaking about the negotiations going on and putting pressure pretty consistently on Jay Monahan about him going behind the players back this summer to make that deal. You know, that can't ever happen again, and all these things. So it was just really interesting to see, you know, he is shifting into a different role of, he is kind of one of the most authoritative kind of voices for the future of golf right now. You know, like, you know, Jack and Arnold, those guys can pass that down to him, you know, 30 years ago, and I think he's trying to pass the game on to the next generation. So what happens in the next, you know, few months, I think the craziest part about all this is that nobody knows. You know, truly everything is still completely up in the situation, which is such a strange time for a sport that is growing as much as ever, but yet its stability is still chaotic. This next month will be fascinating.
Yeah, it's a fluid situation. Well, we've got you on the program. We've not talked about this, but Jay Monahan, give us your assessment of the job that he has done in his role as PGA commissioner.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. You know, I think it's the biggest thing is he has definitely lost the trust of so many players on tour, and that's something that, you know, those are your stakeholders. Those are, I mean, the sport, it's not like the NFL where there's owners and then there's players, and, you know, no, the players are the owners. And I think the way that he basically burned a bridge, I think, on both sides, right? You know, going to war with Liv and maybe not handling that correctly in the first place, creating an us or them mentality, and then immediately burning the players as well to make a deal with them. It just kind of put him in this, what almost feels like a lose-lose situation. And so many players over the last few months have pretty much kind of implied that they're not sure if, you know, how secure he'll be over the next year. And, you know, none of that necessarily is my opinion, but he's definitely on shaky ground. I think that's very fair to say. They're definitely going to let him get through this negotiation and see what comes of it, what happens afterward and whatnot. But absolutely, it's been one of the rockiest few months, you know, years in the history of golf. And I think it's fair to say he's handled so much of it poorly. But number one is, of course, the fact that he, you know, did this behind his players' backs. I just think that's something that he has come out and said that was a failure, and credit to him for that. But it's hard to come back from that.
We will just have to wait and see. Enjoy all the continued coverage of the Hero World Challenge. We've been going one-on-one with Brody Miller from The Athletic. Again, go to his social media, at Brody A. Miller, and check out all of his recent posts. Good stuff. Thank you, Brody.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You bet. That, of course, was Brody Miller from The Athletic. A big thank you to all of our guests and our lineup. Enjoy all the championship coverage, and we'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. Follow us online at eRadio Sports.